Hey, yo, we about to tear it up. Hey, yo.
Break it down.
This right here is how we do it. Break it down.
It's the Breaking Atoms podcast. We break things down to the very last compound. My name is Sumit, a.k.a. the Potty Mouth of the South.
And my name is Chris Mitchell, a.k.a. the Actual Factual.
Yo, this is a great episode we've got for you today. This is part of history. We're not part of history, but our guest is very much part of history in that he was part co-founder of an incredible, legendary studio called D&D Studios. Your favorite rapper's rapper, the greatest of all times, have all come through this studio in one shape or another. Some incredible records happened here, some incredible albums happened here, and the sound we got, like Chris says in the episode, is it's a name you can trust. And we have David Lotwin on the Breaking Atoms podcast, and I think that's it's a celebration to really tip a hat to those who have contributed so much to the culture. Chris, I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah. He looks like Goldberg. He looks like Goldberg.
We talked about it. He's a nice guy, man. He's a nice guy, and like he's got so many stories and so many memories.
His love for Premiere is real.
His love for Premiere is real. His love for reggae is real. His love for music really is real.
And that shone through.
Yeah, you can really see why D&D being the place that it was. You know, it has to be part of the people who are help running it too. It's in the same way that when we spoke to Sean Brouch of Pen and Pixel, you could see why it was successful because of their ethic, the way they approach things.
As someone who uses studios, feeling comfortable and welcome in any kind of creative space is so important. And just the stories he was telling, like I could just imagine it in my head, and I'm like, it was a real community feel.
Yes, absolutely. And a real community feel, not some like buzzword. This is a real thing. There's that lounge in D&D was a place. It was a place where people could meet, talk, collaborate, and a safe space. And it's a safe space, neutral ground, and they're there to work. And so, yeah, he gave us a lot, and I appreciate David. I can't wait for the documentary. Glad to hear that Russell is behind that. Hopefully we'll get that soon. RIP to Spinbad. But no, I hope we can get that documentary. But yeah, man, I'm looking forward to this. This is David Lotwin, D&D Studios, Breaking Atoms. Check it out. It's another special episode of the Breaking Atoms podcast. Ooh, today. Let me tell you something, right?
Ooh.
You see, this is... We can't say we were outside for this, but we can say that we lived those memories of this famous studio. We heard all the stories. We've heard all the music that's come out of this studio. It's a revered studio.
The liner notes.
We've spoken to many of our guests about this particular studio. We are speaking with one of the co-founders, David Lotwin, of D&D Studios. This is for us, like, this is bucket list because we get to speak to someone who was there and who was instrumental in making this happen. So, David, welcome to the Breaking Atoms podcast.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks, guys. Really.
We appreciate you. I'm not going to lie to you. We've spoken to, like, UC, Mike Geronimo, Razkaz. Razkaz told us an incredible story.
It was a world exclusive.
Yeah, it was an incredible story he told us about how he got to New York and he was going to see Preem at D&D. It was the day Ether dropped. And he had this, you know, he was getting a haircut and it was all crazy because the city was on fire with Ether dropping. And he gets to D&D and then he sees Nas at D&D and spends an hour with him, Preem, and Nas in the studio for like an hour. And I think Nas had one of the other rooms. Right. And what was really crazy is Razkaz had Golden Child. So Primo had played him Golden Child, the beat. Actually, what we didn't realize until that interview with Raz was that that beat was already bought by Jay-Z. So Preem called Jay on the day Ether dropped from D&D and said, yo, Raz wants this beat. Can he have it? Yeah, let him have it. And that was amazing. You know, that.
I just started listening to that Razkaz interview today.
Oh really?
Yeah, and I didn't get to that part.
You spoiled it. Spoiler alert, man.
I should have done that. I'm sorry, man.
It's great. I appreciate that.
But I think it comes to the mystique and the things that you were part of and helped create. So I think what we'll do is start with Taking It Back. So I understand when you kind of first started out in music, you went to Jamaica and did some kind of engineering out there with the reggae. So Peter Tosh, what was really cool for me was seeing you work with Augustus Pablo. Me growing up, so hip hop I used to love, but I kind of, my first love was dubs, roots reggae and dubs. So Jacob Miller from Inner Circle is my favorite roots reggae artist. But Augustus Pablo, we have vinyl of Augustus Pablo, Lee Perry, like all of that, like Burning Spear, all of that was part of my childhood. So I guess the first question I had was, what did you learn in terms of your engineering training in Jamaica from the reggae guys? And how did that translate to the projects, that gritty? Because the way they mix things in for reggae is very different. It's very bassline heavy. How did that translate to the projects you did at D&D?
Well, that was my first experience right out of school. So I was very green. And so I really learned, first of all, studio etiquette, being an assistant engineer, being in the room with Peter Tosh, who was a no-nonsense guy. You know, you couldn't really mess up, because Peter, though he was a wonderful, great man, he just... You know, he was working and he didn't have patience for a new kind of intern assistant engineer learning. So I kind of got, it was like trial by fire, you know, like, you know, you set up that mic, you better be done right the first time. So, you know, that was interesting. And just the whole vibe of how to treat clients and, you know, music's a vibe. I always say that music's a vibe. So the studio has to have that feeling where they're comfortable. You know, all of a sudden you go into a corporate space and you're coming out of the projects or you know, in Jamaica, wherever you live, and you're in this fancy, you know, architecturally perfect place. It's not necessarily your vibe. So I thought it was very important to create a very homey, laid back, comfortable space. And I got that from working in Jamaica. I worked at Tuff Gong for a while, which was, you know, I was a huge reggae fan when I went down there. I mean, it was, it couldn't have been a better experience on that level as a fan. And then to be in the room and to see how, just the stuff was layered and just the process that they went through in the studio, because a lot of stuff was written. Peter was interesting where he liked every vocal, everything done, and then he would come and spit his lead vocal, which is pretty unusual. You know, most cats put on the vocal and then they layer it above that. But Peter liked it pretty much done and mixed, and then he'd come in and do his thing. So that was cool. And just, you know, I was in awe for most of the time. You know, at the beginning, you know, Peter considered me Babylon.
Babylon of fire. You know what I'm saying? I get it.
You know, who's this guy?
I think I can hear him saying that in my head now, you know, that Prince Element in his legendary interview. Yeah, that sounds like Peter.
Yeah. Because I came in through his manager, Danny Sims. At the time, Danny was managing him, and I had a relation with Danny, so he brought me, and he's like, who's this, you know, big white guy, you know, what's going on here? So it took a while to kind of break down that barrier, but once it was done, he knew who I was, and the amount of respect for the culture and the music and, you know, every aspect. I became a vegetarian down there, actually vegan for 15 years.
Wow.
You know, very influential on my life, the Rasta philosophy and way of life.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I'm a vegetarian. I say I'm vegan, but I guess cheese is my only thing.
As mindful as you can be, man.
That's, exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. Now, you and Doug, I'm really interested to kind of understand your skills and experiences in ways of how you contrasted each other, but also how you complemented each other. So how what was that kind of working relationship like? Where were you, you know, where were you different and where were you the same in instances?
Well, Doug and I went back to junior high school, so we were very good friends growing up. And we both kind of went off to college. And then, you know, in our freshman year, we said, what are we doing? You know, Doug went to Berklee School of Music. Doug's a brilliant musician. I mean, to this day, he's in a phenomenal band and he has an incredible ear skill set that I just didn't have. In fact, when we, you know, I played a little bass and he was just so superior. He's just amazing. But we love music. And we wanted to get into the business. So we said, yeah, let's try to, we got an 8-track and we just started recording stuff. But he's very technical, very, very brilliant, very, very, very good musician, engineer. I'm more on, I'm on the business side. I'm a people person. I'm the relationships. I kept everyone happy. You know, executive producing was my forte, saying, hey, you know, you would be great on this 45 King track, or, you know, putting people together. So at the beginning, we both engineered, and then I kind of grew out of that, for lack of a better term. Because if you're at the end of the session and you're taking the bill and you were in the room with the cat, it's a little different. You gotta kind of separate it. Because, you know, it's just the way it is. If you're doing work like that, business and creative are kind of separate. So we kind of went down those different paths.
Okay. So you've described the relationship between yourself and Doug. What was the vibe and the allure of D&D? Like, why did people come to D&D to record their records?
Well, at the beginning, you know, it kind of morphed. You know, we were just, we didn't have the best equipment in the world. But we, all our equipment worked. We were very conscious of as we made money, you know, we were young, so we both live in home. So every penny we took, we, all right, now digital reverbs came out. When we started, digital barely existed. There was no MIDI. I mean, so we were at the very beginning as stuff came into, you know, reality. We were at that change to the digital era. So we, you know, we were just big audio buffs growing up, you know, all about the turntables and the cartridges and the, you know, the amps. And so we just had such a love for it and such a love for music. So when I went off to work with Peter, Doug worked at interned at a place called M&I recording studio, and he started being an assistant and getting his skills. And so when I came back off the road, we said, you know, let's just try to do it ourselves.
Okay, nice. I've got one question, actually. You've reminded me. Before it was called D&D, you had the Bronx Connection. And I was reading an article today, and you took out some adverts in the Village Voice. Me being there, you know, just wondering why. Why did you take out adverts in the Village Voice? And can you remember any clients that came as a result of those adverts?
Well, we were just young kids. We didn't really know anyone. So back in the day, the back of the Voice is where you got rehearsal space. When we moved from the Bronx to Manhattan, we said, let's look in the Voice and find places where you can rehearse. Because if you can rehearse, you can record. So that's how we found 320 West 37th Street.
Okay.
And, you know, I remember one client, Louis Ayala, who actually, you know, was a pretty big guy in that world. And then it just became word of mouth. And, you know, we always, for many years, kept that ad in the Voice. Because that was our calling card. Okay. That was like our one ad, maybe some local Long Island magazines, but that was it.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Your favorite room, was it the B room still? Was it always the B room, or did it kind of grow to be the B room?
Well, when we first opened, we only had the A room. You know, it was a little space. And so A in a way, was my favorite room because that was the original D&D. That's where, you know, we built like floating floors and everything was really done, you know, sound-wise and separation. And we had a very big live space, which doesn't exist anymore. You know, we had the Heptones in there.
Wow.
You know, the full, you know, all the Heptones. We had, I don't know, there were 10 guys there that day.
Whoa.
You know, all the horns and,
yeah, yeah.
And, you know, but we built it for that. So that was very exciting that we were able to do live. And a guy named Al Firestein helped us design the room and came in with the spectrum analyzer and made, you know, we made the speakers perfect. Where the B room, in a way, we kind of just threw up. It wasn't as precise. It wasn't isolated. Though Al did come in and tune it, it was more of a, okay, A's sold out all the time. We got our neighbors out. We got this room and we're putting a studio in. We had the same speakers, Yuri 813 A's in both rooms, except once Preem got in there, we put a 20-inch subwoofer.
Wow, he needed that.
Wanted the thump.
Yeah, the drums. So just randomly, right, because I'm not a music guy in that sense, but how long does it take to put that kind of room together? If it's a B room, an A room, the acoustics, the sounds, how you put things together on the walls, like how long is that? Because I always, you know, hear Just Blaze and Guru talking about bass line and how they're able to craft the room themselves in the way they wanted it to sound acoustically. How does at D&D, how long did it take to create one of the rooms in the way you wanted it?
You know what? It took maybe 7 or 8 months to get the A room up and running. And then the B room came much quicker. Because again, we weren't floating ceilings. We weren't three layers of sheetrock and then, you know, airspace between. So the B room went way quicker because we were up and running and people there every day. And but the A room took about 8 months.
Yeah, the only reason I say that because I also want people to understand how much goes into putting a studio together to get the sound right.
True.
It's very important that people listening to this really understand that isn't just putting a mic stand up and putting a couple of pillows around you and think you've got the acoustics right. There's an art to putting it really together to get the best sound. And you think about the records we've heard that have come through that studio, the room also makes it that too. It's the people Absolutely. That have it, but they've got to work with what the tools that are there with them and their talent. It's all mixed into mesh out to this wonderful product that we see. Before I hand over to Chris,
the wiring, not to cut you off, sorry. You know, patch bays, you got to wire each patch bay and that bring it out to the equipment
right.
And the outboard gear and, you know, it's our and the board, every channel goes to the patch bay, goes to, you know, that alone is mind-boggling.
Right, and people don't understand the complexities that go into that. So, just before I hand over to Chris, Limp Bizkit, there's a story you put on your stories on your Instagram. Yeah. He said he bought his pit bull when Meth came in to do a record.
He's an English bull.
Right. Talk to us about that before I hand over to Chris, because we've got to get into these kind of stories too. So you were he was in the reception with you with the dog. What happened there?
No, he was up there a couple of days. Fred Durst and Meth and, Preem was doing that beat, and I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, it was so incredible. And Preem and I are very good friends since day one. So I was very blessed where Preem would always say, hey, Fred Durst is about to spit, come, roll a blunt, come. And so I got to sit through some incredible, I wasn't sitting in my office. I was actually, part of a lot of this and Primo cutting up. And it was just I'm getting a little chilled talking about it, literally, because it was such an experience. But if you see, I have two pit bulls and an English bull. So, and the original logo for D&D, we wanted to call it Bulldog Records. I just love bulldogs. It's just a passion. And if you look at some of the stuff, you'll see a bulldog with a cape flying over New York.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. So, when Fred was up there, I don't remember the name of the dog, but he actually had one of these remote control trucks and the dog used to attack it. And so when he was actually really busy, I would take the dog into my office or sit in a lounge with the dog and play with the truck and just wrestle around with the dog, which again, I have such love for bulldogs. I mean, that just, I loved when he came up and he brought his dog. And then one of the highlights was we went to the Playboy Club for Fred Durst's birthday. Primo was the DJ. So Primo brought me and a bunch of the crew out there and, you know, spending a bunch of time at the Playboy Mansion, not the club, the actual mansion. Wow.
Okay.
Fred Durst's birthday with Primo spinning. I mean, that was a highlight of the career.
I saw a picture of you and Doug online. You're both playing pool. And, you know, when I read some of the interviews, there's always, you know, people would come to D&D, they'd be waiting, hanging around playing pool. I got a question, though. Who's nicer at pool, you or Doug?
Doug is infinitely better.
Okay. He beat you? Have you ever beaten him?
No, it was different levels. Like, he was out there playing. It wasn't, you know, Doug's very precise as a musician. He's just, it wasn't my forte. I didn't even think Doug had his own stick, you know. He was really good and a good player. I just was a scratch player. I didn't do it much.
Okay. So in terms of the artists that came to D&D, any cool pool players?
Yeah, you know, a bunch of guys got into it. We ended up using, I tell the story, that pool table a lot for CeeLo games. A lot of dice, a lot of money was won and lost on that table.
Okay.
I mean, some intense games where, you know, I was more into that. but I'm trying to remember who the great pool players were. There were definitely some guys who, you know, it was a passion. And in fact, if you were a good client, you didn't even have to be working in one of the rooms. As long as you were real and you were one of our people, you know, people just came by to shoot pool and collaborate with people. So many collaborations were done because of that lounge. There were people in A and people in B, and whether it was Nas, Jay-Z, whoever it was, and they go, oh, you know, we need to collaborate. And then records came out of that lounge and the kind of bonds that were created in that pool room and, you know, that space.
Just sticking on pool, just remind me of something. When ODB was getting the Grammys, I don't know if this is... So I have a friend, he's a photographer, Paul H. I remember him telling me a story that he was playing pool with MOP at D&D when ODB was getting the Grammy, where he said Wu-Tang for the Kids. And it just strikes me now that you've asked that question, Chris, that community was there in that studio where people could just play pool with each other. And he's always told me a story. I think I'm pretty sure it was D&D. But it was crazy that happened in that moment. They were watching it, like, MOP bugged out, apparently, just seeing, like, they went crazy seeing ODB do that. But it's just like that moment was captured at D&D, and that's the kind of beauty of what it stands for in hip-hop, right?
It feels like the pool table, that room, was almost like the original creative space. You know, you've got your WeWorks and all that now, where yes, people come and network. It was that before that, if that makes sense.
It's true, and one of the things people loved about the room, and you bring up MOP, I heard Fame say this on an interview, and the Lost Boys, they could roll deep. Like, MOP could come with 15 guys. Not a lot of studios would have, you know, let that happen, accommodate that. But Lost Boys, they came deep, man. They you'd see them coming down the block. Before, it's so funny because at the very beginning we didn't have a buzzer, so people, you know, we go back, so people had not even cell phones, so they had to go to the corner, yo David, you know, come let us in. But what the Lost Boys did is as soon as they got on the block, we're in the middle of the block, 37th Street, they'd go, Lost Boys, Lost Boys,
yo.
And we could actually hear them. And we used to go downstairs and open the door for them.
So imagine, so you be in your office and you hear Lost Boys, and that's them saying that we're here.
Yeah, my office was the front of the building, big windows, fourth floor, usually had a window open. And so I'd hear Lost Boys.
That would scare me to death.
Nah, it was great. It was.
That's amazing. That's a hip hop. That is so amazing. Like, now we're gonna call. We're gonna let you know we're on our way. That's crazy. Right. That is crazy.
I might try that myself. You know, next time I'm outside my house.
There was always at least five of them. So it was a big voice that came up.
I've also heard about the infamous vending machine. People could buy blunts. Explain how that works.
Well, we had the blunt wrappers. We didn't have like rolled herb.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, it became kind of legend, but we had rolling paper and we had blunt wrappers in the machine instead of at 2 a.m. You know, New York's great like that. We had a bodega on the corner. You could get anything at any time, but we had a great vending machine that just had a bunch of munchies and packs of blunts.
Okay, here's me being an idiot, innit? When it said blunt machine, I thought you just put your money in and a blunt just fall down and you just smoke it. Like, I know nothing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't quite that sophisticated.
So, mate, over to
you. Herb is legal now. It's like nothing, but back then it was more of a thing, you know.
Yeah.
No, I can imagine.
Going back to stories,
imagine.
I was thinking about DITC comes up a lot in our podcast. We love the whole crew. We've spoken to a couple of people from the crew, but when was the first time that DITC came to D&D? Was it for Return of the Funky Man? Was it the remix for? Well, was it for the Return of the Funky Man, Lord Finesse? When was the first time those guys came through, Buckwild, all those guys, Showbiz?
Yeah. Finesse was the first, and he brought Prem up to do scratches on Return of the Funky Man, as far as I remember. And once Prem got there, he was very comfortable, and he just camped out. You know, he was at Calliope, which was right down the block. And, he liked the vibe. He liked the console. He liked the sound. Prem used to have a Mazda MPV. I was going to say MP3, MPV. And he had a killer system in it that he knew really well. And at that point, he used to take his cassettes and go down to the car and like AB them and listen to the cassette and make sure it sounded that sound that he knew from his MPV. Was banging, and that was one thing Prem did was really know his sound, and so we tuned the room pretty much for Prem, so he was happy. But that was the Finesse was definitely the guy who brought Prem there, realness.
Mm. Okay, mm. All right, nice. So Premier, he camps out in the B room. How instrumental was DJ Premier in terms of attracting clientele and business to the studio?
In a way, he was everything. You know, he was Prem. People wanted Prem, so they came to D&D. I mean, it was like foot and glove, or whatever, foot and sock and shoe. If you wanted that Primo sound, we were very blessed to have Primo there. And, and then when people came, they liked the room and they were there. Guys like the Lost Boys or Duck Down. There were a lot of crews that didn't necessarily work directly with Prem, and they were in the A room. But, you know, to some degree, also the vibe of Primo being there and he's working with Nas and B, they love being in A and, you know, coming in the lounge and just being in that vicinity.
Okay. So is it... All right, I'm a wrestling guy. Sometimes wrestling companies, they build the business around one wrestler or a group of wrestlers because they know these are our marquee people. Is it safe to say in some ways D&D and the business and the comfort and the B room and all these things were kind of revolved around DJ Premier?
Well, once he got there, certainly, at the beginning, we did a lot of reggae stuff. Augustus Pablo, as you know, was up there. We did a lot of Dennis Brown and, any time that people came in from Jamaica and wanted to record. Dennis Thompson, who when I worked in Jamaica, I worked with Dennis, and Dennis was one of Bob's engineers and probably the greatest reggae engineer of all time. He toured the world with Bob. Babylon by Bus. He recorded that whole record. In fact, he's one of the pictures is with Dennis. So just like Primo for hip hop, Dennis was a call and people wanted Dennis. They D&D. And there was a place called Rocket Rehearsal, which was the big reggae. Anytime a band was coming and they're playing at the Ritz or wherever they're playing, they would go to Rocket to rehearse. And we were, you know, half a block away from Rocket. So a lot of the reggae cats would go to Rocket, come to D&D, do their shows.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, et cetera.
Okay. God bless DJ Premier. What can I say?
Oh, yeah. No, Prem is, and to this day, there's no better representative of hip hop.
No.
He's so brilliant. He's so true to who he is. He's just, and he does so much stuff people don't even know. Like, what a kind, generous, taking care of everybody kind of cat he is. You know, we used to call him Tony because back in the day, the Sopranos, he was the leader of the crew. He was Tony, man. He was Tony Soprano. For everybody, he was just, you know, people would die for him, man. And rightly so. There's no better person on the planet.
It's crazy because DJ Premier, he occupies this certain space in hip hop. It's like I remember where there was a minor dispute with Cannabis. So supposedly DJ Premier produced Devil's Pie for Cannabis. Cannabis turned it down. He gave the beat to D'Angelo, Belly soundtrack, won a Grammy, got paid twice, all good. And there were rumors that Cannabis was going to do a diss track against DJ Premier. And it's like, everybody was like, no. You don't do that. No. Even if you have a valid gripe, you right. don't do that. His name is off limits.
Yes.
We don't talk about Premier disrespectfully. You do not do that. It's on a blacklist of names that you don't mention in a derogatory way. And I love that.
Yeah, because I guarantee Prem went through the right channel. He wouldn't just give it to D'Angelo. I'm sure he said, you know, this is where we're at. You good? Okay, I'm good. Boom, boom. And what a great, I mean, that's one of the tracks, Devil's Pie. I mean, when that came out, I mean, that just stopped the clock for a second.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
When I first heard it, I wasn't sure.
Devil's Pie? Yeah? Okay.
I don't know, but okay, like years that's later, years fair. Later, it's the same thing happened with Banned from TV, Noriega, and Bring It On from Reasonable Doubt. I wasn't sure. And Bring then like, yeah, 10, 15 years later, I'm literally just walking down the street, minding my business, right? And I listened to Devil's Pie and I listened to Bring It On. And I'm like, what was I thinking? Bring it on.
Look, I'm a resident Hove stan on the podcast. It has to be said, period. But Bring It On, Devil's Pie I can mess with. Banff on TV, I would, everyone's tastes are different, but Bring It On's the only one I would be like, eh.
Nah, Bring It On is incredible. 38-year-old Chris, oof.
I mean, it's a great song, but, you know, just for my taste.
Okay, sorry, Hove stan, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I love Devil's Pie. My wife loves Devil's Pie. I mean, that's something we listen to, you know, to this day, all the time.
Now, Prem, if any of you have ever met Prem, he is who he is. Like, he is absolutely the guy you could just have a beer with. He's just such a down-to-earth individual. And for people who come from this culture, you would look at him and go, you know, I'm scared to meet him. But he's so disarming. He's so charming. He's just who he is, right? He will treat everyone the same. Doesn't matter who absolutely. You are. And I think that's like, as a person, and we mentioned this before, as a person, he's just incredible to have. And also you can't diss Prem. That just goes without saying. You can't. You can't.
There's no real reason. I mean, he's true to hip hop. He's true to who he is. He's certainly not in it for the money or for the fame. He's brilliant on so many ways. Just as a DJ,
yeah.
Watching him cut records and figuring out these hooks and using seven records to make one hook. And
mm-hmm.
It's mind boggling.
Yeah, I'm an artist. So I do a lot of, I get a lot of cuts on my records. Premier's, his records are like my reference point. So I'll use my phone and be like, let's go. That's all DJ Premier. Like I could, as far as I'm concerned, every hip hop song ever can have a scratched hook and I would never get bored because of Premier.
I agree. if you listen to 1-2 Pass It, which is a song we did, the D&D All-Stars that Primo did, the interludes between, let's say, Dougie Fresh and KRS-One, I don't know if you really, if you listen to the scratches that Primo did between each interlude, it's mind boggling. Again, I'm getting a chill because it's so on point, and the way he heard it, and he would, you know, he would use a Dougie Fresh record to go into KRS-One and then a KRS-One record to go into Fat Joe. And it was like, my God, man,
it's an encyclopedic memory for lyrics. It's alien like.
Yeah, it's alien like. I've told this story before, but we were once at the studio and, you know, cats would come and give him 12 inch, like white label 12 inches, like local cats. And he liked one song and went to the radio station that night. And he was sitting in for someone, which he did often, like whether it was Stretch or Bobby, you know, whoever he was sitting in for. And he actually played the record that the cat gave him that afternoon. It wasn't a clean version. Him and I are talking. And as he's playing the record, he goes, one second. And he scratched out the curse live on air that of a record he got 4 hours ago. I mean, people don't, you know.
Yeah,
like, that's crazy.
And then I'm like, there's something wrong with you, dude.
Listen, Primo's cleans are great. The way he'll do it, he'll bleep it out but put a sound effect instead, so it still carries on and a sound. The other thing about Primo is, while he's an incredible producer, producers always get labeled with a particular sound, right? So you think, yeah, Pharrell, he might have a particular sound. The Neptunes have a particular sound with Chad. Primo scratches, you can tell distinctively that it's a Primo scratch. If you I don't know many other DJs out there who are producers that would have their own distinctive scratch. Maybe Revolution, I don't know. But you can hear a record and go, that's a Primo scratch. And it's so distinctive to him. And people scratch all day. There's millions of DJs in the world scratching. But Primo has his own almost distinctive scratch that when it comes on record, I know that's Primo.
That's right. And he does have such a broad sound, whether it's Jill Scott, Christina Aguilera. He transcends. But he keeps it... He keeps it cream, but he works with these other people that...
True.
They're the best records.
You know, Christina Aguilera's album, Back to Basics, I know she did some of it at D&D. That Back in the Day song is insane. And to hear DJ Premier talking and then Christina Aguilera comes in, and I remember he told a story that he asked her, you know, like, why do you want to work with me? And she said... I love Kicking the Door and Mos Def Mathematics.
Wow.
Mathematics. Crazy. Jesus. Like DJ Premier brought Christina Aguilera into his world. She didn't lose any of her sauce and kept it him. That genius. Genius. Yeah.
That's what I'm...
You can tell we're DJ Premier fans.
That's what I'm saying. I was doing some Jill Scott. Whatever he does has a sound, but he tailors it to whoever he's working with. And you can't say that about a lot of people. Even Limp Bizkit, you know.
It was like a Wu-Tang-y, oriental type sound, but it made sense because Method Man was on it. Genius. I couldn't do it. I don't know how.
I love how it starts, DJ Premier.
Yeah, you need that stamp. You do.
You absolutely do. Chris mentioned Mos Def Mathematics, Black on Both Sides. Do you remember anything about that recording? Because Raucous, from what I remember, used to do a lot of stuff at D&D, right? Because they didn't have their own space. Is that correct?
Sure. No, we did a lot of Raucous stuff. Headquarters worked for Raucous.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, no, he was the head of promotion for them.
Wow.
So, you know, he brought a lot of stuff and he was always up there. I don't remember that particular session, you know, so many sessions. But we did a lot of stuff with Raucous. Obviously, Big L.
Yes.
Was one of my favorite MCs.
David, you've met everyone.
You've done it all, man. Like, and also people have ascended coming through like the platform of D&D. Right, through that medium of D&D, which is crazy.
We were very blessed to be in that moment, in that space. you know, I just remember Big L Sessions so well because he just blew me away. I mean, I'm like, damn, this guy's like better than everybody, you know. He said that shit like you would have to did he just say that? Like yeah. That kind of, like, God damn, man.
It's funny, I was saying to someone the other day, if Big L was rapping now, in this increasingly politically correct era, he'd have a lot of problems. Big L would probably get cancelled.
Yeah.
I like his humor. I love him, but yeah, he had a few lines that, yeah, in 2020 might offend some people, but we love him for that. Regardless, rest in peace, Big L.
Rest in peace, Big L. Rest in peace. I mean, he was and such a nice guy. I mean, he was just one of the guys. You know, he was just understated, and I don't want to say he was meek, but he, you know, he didn't like stand out like. You know, and then when he spit, you're like, oh my God, this guy's incredible.
Supremely talented.
Like that very famous picture of him in front of the microphone.
Yes.
That's in Studio B. That's...
Oh, wow.
Oh, the one where he's kind of, it's black and white, and he's looking off, he's looking off to the left.
That's D&D, wow.
Okay, yeah. I use that picture in my Big L playlist. That's like an iconic picture.
Yeah.
So
he was up there, I think, a day, like the day before he was murdered, he was up there.
Oh, wow. Wow.
One of my engineers, Dexter, called me and he's like, yo.
Dexter Thibu, have I said it right?
That's right.
Yeah. We need to find him too. He's on the list.
I can't believe what I just heard. So, you know, it's brutal. For nothing. You know, that's one guy who just was a peaceful, dope MC. So
you mentioned before D&D records. I love the Craig G record, Ready, Set, Begin. I know that came out on D&D. What were some of the objectives of D&D records? Like, why did you set up a record label to complement the studio?
Well, KRS-One gave us the idea. That's how we did 1-2 Pass It.
Right.
He's like, you guys have so many dope MCs and producers coming through here. You know, what are you doing? Why don't you guys, you know, put out a record and start a label? And we're like, Chris, that sounds like an idea. You want to be on the first record? And he said, yeah. So, you know, 1-2 Pass It. We had what we called a 40 and blunt party. So we sent out invitations and basically put up a mic in the middle of the room. Preem came up with the beat, and it was that live cypher vibe. Not a battle, but a cypher of just guys spitting together with a bunch of people in the room. And, you know, that's how that record came about. And then we started doing a bunch of D&D All-Star tracks using different producers and different MCs, and we signed Craig G. We signed Afu Ra.
Yes. Body of the Life Force.
That's right.
Yeah. Monotony. One of the most underrated premiere beats of all time. I'll stand on that one. Monotony is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it was amazing. You know, Afu came out of J. Rue's camp, which is Gangstar Foundation. So we were just, you know, blessed to just, you know, be kind of in the center of it and be able to, collaborate with these incredible people.
That's dope. That's amazing. That's amazing. Chris, I've got nothing else. I'm good.
You good? All right. The hip hop guy in me, David, I've got just one question to ask you, and you can take your time. What are some of your favorite records or albums recorded at D&D? If an alien came from the sky and said, David, what did they record at D&D? I need a playlist. What are you going to hook him up with?
Well, you know, our first gold record was a song called Wiggle It. Two in a Room. Wiggle it just a little bit. I want to see you wiggle
that
it.
That was recorded at D&D?
Yeah, that was our first gold record.
Excuse me?
That's crazy. Yeah.
So I have a love for that record. Cutting Records and Aldo, they did a lot of stuff up there. I really love that record. We did guys that just going off the track a little bit, I'm just wondering if you know the Blow Monkeys, Dr. Robert?
That name is not familiar to me.
Not to me.
Ah, because they were big in England.
The Blow Monkeys. Ah.
Because they came, you know, check them out. They came to D&D to get that New York sound, and we did their whole record. And then Doug ended up going back to England and spent about a month there mixing the record.
Okay, I got into, you know what it is, because I got into hip-hop late. And when I say late...
They're not even hip-hop.
They're not, they're like, I guess they're kind
like
of...
like a pop, English pop.
Right, okay.
Right. Dr. Robert, he's a pretty famous guy. Man.
Yeah, I was going to say though, because I grew up in church, you see, so I didn't get into the devil's music until like 13, 14.
Understood.
Yeah, so I was choir boy for a hot minute.
So obviously Nas... You know, New York State of Mind, that whole album, you know, that's a seminal album. That was a life-changing album.
Yes.
I'm a huge KRS-One fan, Return of the Boom Bap.
Great album.
Great album, man. Something I listen to all the time. You know, the first Lost Boys album, we did like that whole album. So they spent months up there and... you know, that album just came out great to me. Obviously, Biggie. I mean, you know, there's so much that comes to mind that it's just hard to pinpoint one thing. We did a song by D-Lite, Groove is in the Heart.
Yes.
And that was a huge song for us. Like when that, because... they were a new group. Q-Tip was on that. Bootsy Collins on bass, and we did that whole album, every track, every mix. So when Groove is in the Heart, it dropped, and that video came out. It was explosive.
Explosive.
Mm. And that brought a lot of shine onto D&D.
Dope.
That particular record.
Dope.
And then of course all the Gangstar stuff.
Oh, of course. I mean,
of course.
You know, that goes without saying.
Absolutely.
J-Ru is one of my favorite MCs is J-Ru. I love J-Ru to death.
I was very fortunate. Sorry, go ahead.
I love J-Ru as a person. We used to sit and play chess and, you know, I just, he was a dear friend and I loved his philosophy. And, you know, when he did that diss song to Puff.
One day.
Oh, one day is it?
Yo, yeah, that was a little heavy, you know, because he was with Preem. It didn't get that heavy because Preem was like, "Nah, that's my man," you know, and Preem was down with Puff too.
Yes.
So, you know, he was the UN, but he said, "Listen, he wanted to spit that. He's a man."
But you see, the respect that Preem has is like, "Look, that's my man," but you're still gonna buy a beat from me afterwards.
That's right. Exactly. So that was a heavy kind of moment, but. You know, it was, you know, I love Rue. I love that first album. The Bitches. What?
I was fortunate enough to see him live last year. It was J-Ru and Pharoah Monch. And he brought out OC. OC is my favorite rapper. So he brought him out as a special guest and they did Return of the Crooklyn Dodgers.
There you go.
And there's a picture of me with my hand in the air, eyes closed, like I'm having a spiritual moment.
I bet.
Yeah.
You know,
D&D.
One of my favorite. I know I have 700 favorite records, but that record, man, you know,
special.
To this day, you know, as far as D&D and, you know, we do have a documentary coming. Good.
That was going to be my final question. What's the update?
Yeah. Well, you know, this whole COVID shit kind of slowed everything down, but Russell Peters, the greatest comic in the world and, an incredible hip hop fan, historian, unbelievable DJ, is one of the executive producers.
Amazing.
Yeah. Russell's the one who got it on track.
Oh, I love Russell. Listen, I fucking love Russell. Like,
I love
him. Like you were talking about Primo, about
like
how he
Primo
gives.
And he's just the best. He's
I fucking love Russell. I've just got to say it. I don't care. I fucking love that guy.
And he's like a top of the head MC when he does crowd work. He's so brilliant.
Yeah,
he's just so witty and he's just so on point.
We hear he's also very kind. We spoke to Marco Polo. We spoke to Marco Polo, and he was saying that Russell Peters offered to pay for Sean Price's funeral.
He's like that, dude. He's done more, like Preem. He's done more for more people than, and he does it on the low. And I gotta say, rest in peace, Spinbad.
Yes, 100%. I was about to say, rest what happened? In peace.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Spinbad passed away a week ago today. He toured the world with Russell, and you know, they were boys, and you know, it's just so heartbreaking. And one of the, yeah, I keep saying, but Spin was just such a nice, kind, generous, sweet guy. I mean, besides being an incredible DJ. Because you can't fuck around with Russell. Russ is into DJing. Mm. So if you're not so on the point, he's not bringing you all over the world.
Yeah, true. True.
You know, I think he got into him from his mixtapes back in the day.
It always
really rest in peace. I was heartbroken.
I was quite sad. I woke up and I said to my wife, I said, yo, DJ Spinbad passed away. Because we had seen Russell at a comedy show not so long ago in London. And we were like two rows from the front. We're like row B. And I said, you see this guy? Because I think Starting From Scratch wasn't there, but Spinbad was. Right. And he was just, yo, Spinbad was killing the warm-up, right? Before, and my wife was like, this guy's incredible. I was like, but he passed away. I was like, it was such a, like, it was one of those, oh, I felt so bad. And I thought about Russell and I thought about Spinbad's family. It's just, this year is crazy, man. And the people we lost and...
Spin's mom had just been killed by a drunk driver about 6 weeks ago. Ooh. 10:30 in the morning.
Oh my God.
And it just, you know, that was just, that's such tragedy before he passed away. It was just really sad for a brilliant, sweet, even my, you know, I got anytime Russell's in the vicinity, my wife and I go to the show. I mean, cause it's my biggest pleasure. And Spin, which McCall, my wife, was always like, the first guy to come up to me backstage was always Spin. And, hey, McCall, what's going on? You know, he was that kind of cat. And just heartbreaking.
It's sad. It's really sad. But
hip hop lost a really great ambassador. And I know Russ is crushed. So, yeah.
David, I just want to say, on behalf of Breaking Atoms, thank you so much. For you, not only for your time.
Great. You guys were so wonderful and prepared, and it was such a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Yeah, but we got to give you your flowers. Oftentimes, we celebrate the names on the CD and the people we see, and sometimes the brilliance behind the scenes goes overlooked. Royce the 5'9" said something on the record. He said, "Me and Preem, both names go together like they ain't supposed to be separate, like D and D." Growing up, buying albums. When it said recorded or mixed at D&D Studios, that was a seal of approval. It was a sign of quality. I'm a big wrestling fan. So whenever the wrestling goes down at like Madison Square Garden, that's holy ground for wrestling. And I'm going to go on record and say D&D Studios is holy ground for hip hop. And we want to thank you.
Thank you so much.
And Doug. And it pains me that I never got a chance to set foot there. But we will be looking forward to the documentary, and D&D means something to us and the culture as a whole. So thank you.
My man, thank you. Really, respect, guys. I used to be told I would look like Goldberg all the time.
You know what? You're going to laugh, you know? I said that to Sumit before we, in the pre-production, I said, this dude looked like Goldberg, bruv.
Oh, well, now I'm all grand. So, but back in the day when Goldberg was prevalent.
Right.
Yeah.
I used to get stopped like on a daily basis. Yo,
okay. Funny. So you understand that, you understand the wrestling references. Cool.
Yeah. No doubt.
All right. Thank you.
We appreciate you. Thank you, brother.
Oh man. I appreciate you. Respect.
Take care. Blessings, peace, bro.
Thank you. All the best. Peace.
A big thank you to David for joining us on the podcast. That last bit was funny about Goldberg. Him getting stopped. Yeah. That's funny. You called it.
I called it. When I saw his picture, I said, yo, this brother looked like Bill Goldberg.
Now, honestly, man, I had fun. I had a lot of fun, and there's a lot of knowledge then. I heard stories today that I never heard before.
Yes, the Lost Boy story is that's incredible.
Yo, if I can learn something new from each interview we do, that's a win for me.
Yeah.
And that Lost Boy story is crazy.
It's funny. I just got a tweet from Mr. Cheeks, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a new Lost Boys album coming out, and I was talking about them on Twitter, and he just sent me a link to the album. I think it drops, like, soon.
Oh, dope. Okay.
So that's
okay.
That's why, you know, him telling us that Lost Boys story. I'm like, oh, new Lost Boys album coming out. Yeah, yeah, I have to check that.
That would be great. But no, there's a lot in this. There's a lot of nuggets, a lot of stories. If you love rap, if you love that rap that we grew up, that kind of almost what we call the golden era. And also, if you love Primo, you're going to love this. So now we had a lot of fun. So peace to David. Hopefully we'll get him back when the documentary is ready to roll out. So yeah, I can't wait for that. But as always, you can follow us on social at Break the Atoms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. My personal is at Hip Hop Chronicle. Chris's personal is at I Am Kinetic. You can follow us on your favorite podcast platform. We are everywhere. Just search Breaking Atoms Podcast. Chris, any last words?
No. Open up your CDs, go into the archive. If you see anything with D&D Studios on there, you know what time it is.
Yes, yes indeed. Until next time, peace.
Peace.